Welcome to The Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. This is episode 308. This week's From the Outside In topic is, do we have too much television? Also, we have spoiler-free reviews of A Quiet Place, Blockers. We're going to have a discussion on some reshoots, celebrity beefs affecting our movies, and Westworld trolling its own audience. It's going to be a fun one. Let's get on with the show. All right, my name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today is my fellow host, Johnny Davenport.
Hey, Aaron. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. And joining us from Screen Rant and also her own website, heycasey.com, Casey Spivey.
Hello. How are you guys?
Wonderful. Welcome back. You were on episode 274, which was last year, way last year.
Whoa, that seems like a long time ago.
I seem to remember it as I was supposed to make an argument, but Casey made the argument for me, and all I had to do is shut up and shake my head yes to whatever she was saying.
Oh, was it whole court? We did whole court. That's right. That's what it was.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Were we arguing about, was it the movie theater that people were complaining about and all Wonder Woman things?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I was impassioned about that.
Yeah, you were a judge, and I didn't even get my argument out, and you're like, no.
Like, I have opinions, and I can't be moved.
You know, in her defense, she wasn't going to stand by and let us mansplain why it should or should not happen.
This is true.
Yeah. You guys were nice about that.
Mansplain.
No gaslighting, no mansplaining.
Right off the bat, this is something I think is really cool, and I want to bring it up for 2 points. One, because Casey just learned about 8 minutes ago, and she actually has a roommate that's on Westworld.
But which, a neighbor.
Which is funny. Sorry, neighbor. This is a kind of a marketing brilliance. Westworld is a huge show for HBO, and their first season was ripe with theories of what was going on, what was coming. And the showrunner suggested to Reddit fans of all people, that they would release a video containing all of Season 2's mysteries laid out for them and leave Reddit the protectors of that information if they all upvoted it, which of course they did. Reddit complied, Westworld obliged by releasing the video, which ended up being a Rickroll of epic proportions as Evan Rachel Wood sang Never Gonna Give You Up. What it makes me ask is two things. One, Casey, you've got a good feeling for fans because you're on Screen Rant, so you interact with a lot of them. How do you think they're going to take that? You think they're going to be offended by that, or they're going to embrace it? I'm a fan. I thought it was great.
I know. I think it's definitely going to be embraced because I don't know. I don't think people truly want things spoiled. You know, like there are. It's better to watch it and see it live, and I think that them pulling a fast one on us is brilliant.
I felt embarrassed. I didn't see it coming. Okay, well, it moves me on to ask, could you ever see that as the next logical step to combat spoilers? Would it make sense to actually release all of that?
No. That was an intense reaction. I think that would be terrible. That just goes against all rules of narrative storytelling. Right?
Yeah, pretty much. I think that it's a ridiculous idea to release anything ahead of time because then, what is the point of doing the TV show if you're just going to do anything like that? I appreciate the joke they pulled on everyone for two reasons, though. The first reason is because when Aaron, you shared the article with me last night, I saw it. I was like, all right, cool, whatever. And you're like, well, is it cool? I'm like, it's Reddit. Who cares about Reddit? I don't care about Reddit. Why are you even caring about Reddit? And then the next thing was that this morning I'm getting ready to have this whole discussion on the show, and they Rickrolled everybody, and I'm like, okay, cool. I don't have to have the discussion I thought I was going to have about this. I'm happy with that.
Right. It's surprising that it got so many, what is it? Up likes, up whatever.
Up votes. Yeah.
Up votes. Yeah.
Get hip, Casey. Come on.
I'm sorry. I'm not on the YouTubes and the Twitters, but no, I am. But I feel like who wants that? Who really does want it spoiled? I don't even like to look ahead at birthday gifts. Like I don't peek in my presents or anything like that. So I like surprises. So
Aaron does all the time.
When I was a kid, I sure did. I don't like spoilers at all. It was funny because yesterday we didn't know we were being Rickrolled. We just thought it was like, what? They're really going to do this? Because I'm sorry, it's cool if they want to trust the internet is all I kept thinking, but was, I don't trust the internet. Why do you? You people shouldn't trust. And obviously they don't. But right. It concerned me. But there are so many people saying this is great. Not a problem. I look forward to that. Then I can just enjoy the show. So apparently there is a vocal minority maybe that would want that. My theory is so they can ruin it for everybody else. But that's just the theory.
I'm not a Redditor, but I am an Imgur. So on Imgur, there's actually there's a group of people. Like whenever a movie comes out that's really big, or whenever a TV show happens, there's actually a group of people who will jump on Imgur as soon as they get home and start downvoting anything that looks like a spoiler for the end of a TV show or the end of a movie. It actually does happen, at least in that community. So I can't imagine it not happening in Reddit as well, as far as just downvoting everything. So I could see it happening. I just don't trust it. It's just there's one thing that's wrong with that, and we have to trust people.
Right. I was thinking about with Infinity War coming out, they released, I think the producers or the directors, they mm-hmm. released the statement that asked people to, you know, there are going to be special screenings and yada, yada, but please, please, please don't blab about what's going on for the people who haven't seen it yet. And I'm curious to see how that plays out.
I'll be honest. The ones I'm more worried about are Entertainment Weekly, because every time they have a headline, it's, oh yeah, I can't believe Rick died on Walking Dead. You know, it's just like they go straight to whatever the spoiler is as the headline. I don't, that's what I'm more concerned with.
Right. They're desperate for those clicks, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, The Rock elaborated on his feud with Vin Diesel a little bit, which if you weren't aware, last year he was on Instagram talking about candy asses, and apparently he finally admitted that he was talking about Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel he called a candy ass. And one side of the tale is his and all that. It became like this big dramatic event. Tyrese got involved. Tyrese, really, I mean, this is all you have. Sit down. Does this kind of drama turn you off to a franchise at all?
It's not necessarily whoever's the loudest is right. Like, it could also be that The Rock is at fault here, and they just literally just have different approaches to work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I mean, maybe Dwayne The Rock Johnson has so much going on that he's trying to be really efficient, and his time isn't necessarily everyone else's time, and that's just, you know, maybe Vin Diesel just doesn't, you know, bow down and let him have the time. I don't really know what's going on, but there could be multiple sides to the story. So I just think it's frustrating when people have, you know, egos involved, because people around them are just telling them that they can do whatever they want, or they're so important that the whole world revolves around them. And I'm not saying that about The Rock, but it really could be the case.
Oh yeah. I mean, ego's the whole franchise is ego. The whole thing is.
Right.
Who looks great and without a shirt on, who looks great with shirts on, you know,
right.
Everyone.
I mean, this is Fast and the Furious. So it's just like, I mean, this is not, this is, I guess it's to be expected.
Does it turn you off, John, from the franchise at all?
Well, yeah, I think it's starting to turn me off a little bit from the franchise. And I don't know if it's because of how ridiculous that franchise in particular is. But when you start having like infighting among people who on screen portray like a more of a family unit, it starts to... And we'll probably go into this a little bit more when we start talking about our next article, but it starts to really weigh on what you're looking at. It takes away a little bit of that fantasy.
It bleeds through. Yeah, I had a hard time with it. And I actually met somebody, and I can't say where because I don't want to get them in trouble, but I met someone who's familiar and said that basically backed up what Rock is saying, but hey, who knows? But he did say, and I want to say exactly what Johnson said, so no, I'm not misquoting. He said, that is correct. We were not in any scenes together in Fate of the Furious. So they weren't in any scenes. A lot of fans speculated that. Now we know. Vin and I had a few discussions, including an important face-to-face in my trailer. This is so machismo. And what I came to realize is that we have a fundamental difference in philosophies and how we approach filmmaking, or I'm sorry, movie making and collaborating. It took me some time, but I'm grateful for that clarity, whether we work together again or not. Dun, dun, dun. Mm. Casey, you write for a website that specializes on focusing on this stuff. Did you ever cover one of these celebrity beefs?
No, thank God. but, you know, like living in LA, people talk and you hear, there's hearsay of, oh, you know, The Rock was 3 hours late to set when I was an extra. And like, you know, things like that, that you kind of like hear from other people. But it's like, it's all just like rumors and stuff. Mm-hmm. I think that people look for things to validate what they already want to believe about somebody. So I think in fights like this, it's like you're looking for holes in the armor that like, you know, especially when two people are so big and so successful and seemingly don't have any other controversies, it's like, oh, you know, they're fighting, like who's at fault? Like where is the crack in this mask? And it's just like, why don't you just focus on making a good movie?
Well,
wait, what?
Whoa. We don't want that. We want Fast and the Furious. Whatever those are, that's what we want.
I'm not saying it's not a good movie. I'm just saying focus on making it.
No, we're saying they're definitely not good movies. They're just fun. They're fun. I mean, The Rock, you know, he steered a torpedo with his foot. I don't know how good that is, but it's entertaining.
Vin Diesel couldn't be bothered to learn more than one word in Spanish when he's in Cuba. And yeah, so yeah.
John is still really bothered by this.
Don't get me started. Actually, I almost started myself, didn't I?
Yes, you sure did. All right. Well, we'll find out more, I'm sure, when the next movie comes out. Hopefully, The Rock will be in it, because I think he really livens those movies up, and he gets to amp up his own persona. But Tony Gilroy opened up a bit about his hand in reshaping Star Wars Rogue One, which nabbed him a screenplay credit, and how the film was in terrible trouble. It's not really nice going saying that kind of thing, hindsight. But we know the issue with Justice League last year. Solo next month has had two directors and a complete overhaul. And it seems like every major movie has a reshoot issue. At some point, Deadpool just had an issue. Deadpool 2 just had a problem, according to, you know, reports. Does it ever concern you as a fan, or can you tune it out and wait for the finished product?
I'm a little bit of a walk in the line on that, because there are cases where I pay attention to it. But 9 times out of 10, I don't, when the finished product actually hits, the things that I'm paying attention to isn't the finished product. I'm trying to play this game. Is The Rock in this scene with Vin Diesel? Is this a reshot, or is this original canon, or is this what's going on? And I stop paying attention to the actual product we're having in front of us. And it's something that as I'm growing older, I'm learning that, and as I'm trying to appreciate movies more and more, I'm trying to tune out a lot of this happened on this set, or this happened behind the scenes, or these people were having these arguments. And I'm trying to remember that the more, it's like, so on Doctor Who, there was a character named Clara, and this is for our Doctor Who fans. One of her famous lines was, a souffle isn't a souffle, it's the recipe. And the more things I start adding to that recipe on a certain movie, the more it starts to taint or change the flavor of that movie. Mm. And I want to keep it as simple as possible and let them entertain me versus trying to figure out why I'm looking at what I'm looking at.
Casey, do you care?
Yes. I think that reshoots are necessary a lot, especially I think with big budget movies where there's a million jillion people involved, like, you know, the studio is involved and this production company is involved, and there's so many people who are trying to put, you know, their opinions in the first go around with the script, and then you get on set. And I think that especially when it's a big thing that may have been piecemealed together, you finally get to look at it in the edit and you go, oh, there's a giant plot hole because we decided to cut the spider bit and put this in, and oh wait, that character is actually not playing very well. So I think that they can be really helpful and really useful. But you know, you also see stuff like Suicide Squad, where they cut the movie together and then some really awesome dude cut an awesome trailer together and they go, oh, wait, actually, we should probably go reshoot the movie to match the trailer. And it's like, no, no, no. That idea. You know, so I think it can go either way. But I think usually it's there to help.
It drives me crazy that it's the time we live in. But there's so much of it out there that there are fickle fans. And I say fickle, mm-hmm. but I mean, maybe they're just diehard, however you want to word it, that because they know that this happened, just cling to it. And that's all you'll see on message boards and everything. Like, the mustache, my God, the mustache from Justice League. Right. Because that destroyed the entire film, the stupid mustache that was CGI'd out, that other than the first shot, I didn't notice throughout the entire movie. But to hear some fans tell it, it brought the whole movie down, it destroyed it, why did they even, oh, shut up. But there's a lot of that. And I think knowing the reshoots are going on, when I think they've gone on forever, I mean, they just weren't as public as they are now. You know, reshoot typically is done to make a movie better. So if anything, you should be feeling better about the movie. Like, hey, they recognize there's a problem, they're trying to fix it. You know, or they recognize the storyline wasn't as fluffed out as it needed to be, or it needed a point to drive that point home. I mean, to me, it builds more faith that they're taking the movie seriously than it would be, you know, we're just going to put it out there.
Yeah. I mean, they do it with ADR all the time. Like, I don't know if you've ever noticed, I'm an editor, so I noticed like this, but like there'll be a shot of the back of somebody's head and they'll be saying like a key plot point, or like they'll be saying something that's like, like clarifying something. And it's like the reaction shot of somebody else. Like, they do it all the time because they get in the edit and they're like, oh, that definitely wasn't clear. Like, we need to have that actor come in and like really drive that point home or whatever. And it's like, you would never notice. But of course, if there's PR and message boards about it, then people are like looking for it and being, you know, picky. I don't know why anybody would hate on a reshoot unless it really brings it down, which I don't think it does.
Well, what it is that people have a problem understanding what the creative process really is, because you're creating something out of the ether and putting it and making it something tangible for everyone to appreciate. And but you never just, like, you don't have like a mold of clay and just make a few moves and all of a sudden it's the image you want right there in that clay. You do a structure, you build on that structure, you start shaping it, you start moving it. And the more you have to work it, the more that image comes in the focus. And people don't make that understanding. As an illustrator myself, when people watch me draw, one of the questions I get is, well, why did you just erase over that and start over again? I didn't erase over it. I started visualizing things differently, and I saw something I can change or move or sharpen that I can do a little bit differently as I'm redoing the process. So yeah, one drawing one step to the final step are completely different things, but it's all part of the breakdown and rebuilding of something to make a complete image.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Artists get it.
Yeah. What he said. I'm just going to go with it. I can draw Garfield. Does that help? I don't know if that does anything for me. Have you ever blatantly noticed where, other than the mustache, because obviously everyone noticed that, have you ever blatantly noticed where the reshoots were in anything?
I don't know.
I don't think so myself. I'm just no.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell ADR because the sound is different, but I don't think I could tell you like, oh, that was totally a reshoot, because they're obviously using the same cameras and the same actors and the same directors. And I mean, like, if you reshot it 3 years later and the kid is suddenly 3 feet taller than he was when he was six, like, maybe that's a clue, but.
He started like Opie and he comes out like Ron Howard.
Yeah, exactly. I remember one of my like favorite movies as a kid was the live action Peter Pan, which is a really weird movie to love looking back on it, but I did. And like they started with the Peter Pan. He was, you know, 5'3" or something like that. But he went through puberty over the 2 years that they shot. And like towards the end of the movie, he's like 6 foot, like... Like all of a sudden, like a completely different person.
Really funny. So he grew in many ways. So that makes sense. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's like Boyhood with Peter Pan.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, well, we're going to move on to significant anniversary. Every once in a while, when some movie hits a big anniversary, we'll bring it up and kind of discuss, should the movie have even been made? You know, where does it stand in the history of film, that sort of thing. This on April 9th, 1993, Indecent Proposal hit theaters, and it revolved around, if you don't know what this movie is, it revolves around a rich Robert Redford who desired the married woman who was Demi Moore, and she was married to a down-on-his-luck kind of guy, Woody Harrelson. And he offers $1 million to sleep with her, or spend one night with her. And they took it and then watched their lives kind of spiral apart. This is one of those movies that's, well, it's now 25 years old. I don't know if it could be made today, and we're going to talk about that in a second. But what are your thoughts on this particular movie, what it stood for, its legacy? Do you even remember seeing it when it came out, John?
I actually know I didn't see it when I came out. And I'm still not convinced I did see it. But even though I know that there's parts of that movie that I will recognize in pop culture. Demi Moore rolling around in the bed of money. That's okay. Yeah. I mean, that happened. That happened in the preview. And I think I went through puberty when that happened because it was Demi Moore. So some of the things that I looked up about the movie that were interesting is that it was nominated in 1994 for several Razzies, one for worst actor, Robert Redford, worst actress, Demi Moore, worst director, worst original song, in all the right places. It ultimately won three trophies that year. Worst supporting actor, Woody Harrelson, and worst screenplay. I mean, it is not a well-liked movie at all. And
it was a huge hit, though. It made like $100 million. It was a huge hit.
I think it made more than $100 million. Actually, total worldwide is $266 million.
See, wow. Even bigger hit. People were into the whole paying a woman $1 million to sleep with them thing.
Interesting.
I think it was. It could have been more like, you know, getting paid $1 million for that.
I remember when it came out, everybody was talking about it. Would you do it? Would you do it? Would you do it? And I'm like, oh, yeah. That was 25 years ago. $1 million is like $1 billion now. So yeah, who wouldn't? I don't get the debate. Especially Robert Redford's not exactly hideous.
Right. It was a more conservative time, I think, too. Like, we hadn't had nude photo leaks of celebrities and stuff. Like, now that's like every other day, and we're like, ah, sure. But like, I guess it's like such a scandalous topic that maybe it was a big deal. I don't know.
It was a big deal. People were, you know, the sanctity of marriage, and you know, is it adultery if you take $1 million and you sleep with this other guy, and is it morally wrong?
right.
Did you just answer the question? Okay.
Yes, it's adultery, right?
Well, I mean, he gave the thumbs
it's also,
up.
It's also prostitution. Like,
so basically, if you get the husband's thumb up and you do it in Vegas, you're fine.
I guess. See? I don't know. Legally? I don't know.
That's the big debate. That was like the huge thing then. Is it morally wrong? Is it morally reprehensible? Is, you know, blah, 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 blah.
Got it.
So it was, I mean, it was a really kind of scathing topic at the time. Do you think we could make this movie today with the subject matter?
I don't think it would do well today. I think it wouldn't even, I don't think it would shock people or even interest people, honestly. I mean, like with a movie, I was thinking about this the other day with American Beauty. That movie, I don't think we could make today. I mean, that is sleeping with a child. Like, it is, that is not okay to make anymore. But it's like a classic. I don't think that this is a classic that like wouldn't fly today. I don't think it's in that category personally.
I think if they punched up the sexiness to it, or punched up something to it, let's take a look at the hideous movie we all saw together, or separately but together.
What are you talking about? Are you just making up things? I don't know what you're talking about.
The Shades of Grey movie, whatever.
Oh, 50 Shades of Grey. Oh. Yeah.
That's the one. See, if they punched up the sexiness and made it more feminist friendly, like 50 Shades of Grey tries to in a bad way, you know, that sort of thing. I think it could do something. I don't know.
I think they should give it the girls trip treatment and make it like a kitschy comedy with like I don't know, Kristen Wiig and like I don't know.
You have my attention.
I'm listening. Melissa McCarthy's in here at some point.
Yeah. It's like Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy are married, and then it's some like it's like Zach Galifianakis, like, hey ladies, and then now it's a comedy.
Now I am so in. That sounds so much better than what we got.
This is coming to theaters 2020.
I'm maybe not Zach Galifianakis, but somebody schlubby like that. I could see that.
Yeah. You know. Oh, who's the guy that just is in a lot of trouble, who just quit Silicon Valley but was in Ready Player One? And,
TJ Miller.
TJ Miller. Yeah. TJ Miller and Melissa McCarthy. Maybe, what is her name? She wrote Last Black Unicorn and Tiffany Haddish.
Yes.
Tiffany Haddish, TJ Miller.
I'm sold. Lesbian couple, $1 million, sleep with the guy. He's kind of ugh, and they're gay. So, you know, now you've got all these complications and then you just make it funny.
Yeah. Great. I think
I'm really in.
As long as Miller is out of jail by then, because apparently he's making fake bomb threats. Bad move. Bad move.
I hope that was a prank that he filmed for something.
By the sounds of it, we don't really do that kind of speculation, but it sounds like you might have been drunk. You know, hey, who hasn't called it a bomb threat when you're drunk?
Yeah, right. I don't even know how I would go about doing that. How does he have the phone number in his drug dial?
He just dialed 911.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
Got it.
Hey, this woman that took my seat, I think she's got a bomb in her purse. Make her move.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what it feels
like.
Do you
know who I am?
I was in Deadpool. What? Yeah. Deadpool.
My good friend, Steven Spielberg.
Oh, there you go. Is this Ryan Reynolds? No, the other one.
That's funny.
Okay, so Patreon real quick before we get to our next little bit. We wanted to take a second and say thank you to our Patreon supporters who donated graciously at patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. If you support Ho with just $5 a month, you can receive 2 bonus episodes a month. And also there is a early episode for the next season of Remake This Movie Right, which we did for Star Wars. So you can check that out.
Ooh.
Now we're going to do 2 spoiler-free reviews. Casey, did you see either A Quiet Place or Blockers by chance?
No, I saw Ready Player One instead last night. I was going to go see A Quiet Place, but I did not.
Well, what did you think of Ready Player One? You can tell us real quick. What'd you think?
I thought it was fun. One of my friends was like, just turn your brain off. There's a ton of plot holes. So go into it and just have fun. And so that's kind of what I went into it to do. And I thought it was long and there were like 8 acts instead of 3. But, you know, I thought it was a great, great time. I had fun.
Did you see 3D or IMAX or anything?
I get motion sickness, so I have taken a step back from 3D. But I thought it would be great in 3D. I think it's probably made for that experience.
Oh, it pops. It pops.
Yeah?
Yeah, I was actually surprised they made CGI characters feel like real characters.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would be cool to watch if I could... maybe take Dramamine. I don't know.
That's a serious effort just to see.
I used to know somebody who took Dramamine before every movie.
Really?
Yeah.
And they didn't fall asleep during it? Or they did?
Nope. Didn't fall asleep, but they would have to take Dramamine before every movie because they got motion sickness for everything, not just 3D.
Yeah. I mean, I get it. It's getting worse as I get older, but, you know, maybe I'll start carrying around Dramamine into the theaters.
If you enjoyed the movie, take a look at the book. The book is actually a pretty fun read.
Yeah, you know what I really loved? I loved all the Easter eggs for film people.
Like, yep,
there were so many. Is that in the book?
The book has even more.
No,
it's actually more about film and music in the book than it is anything to do with video games. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, I'm gonna have to read it now.
Reading's overrated. Just get Audible and.
Yeah, get Audible. That way Will Wheaton will read it to you.
Hey.
Ah, great.
I don't know if that's really selling me on getting the Audible version. But it's still, I like the idea of feeling like I'm a king and people are reading to me. I just like that. I'm going to get some grapes and then listen to Will Wheaton. All right.
Read it to me, peasant.
Exactly. Read it to me, peasant Whedon. All right, we've got two spoiler-free reviews, one for A Quiet Place, one for Blockers. John, start us off with A Quiet Place. Casey, we promise we'll be spoiler-free, but I understand if you want to mute and step away so you don't get take any chances. I understand. So, John, go ahead.
Okay.
All right. So, yeah. So, Aaron and I both saw Quiet Place. It was directed by John Krasinski. It was screenplayed by Brian Woods, Scott Beck, and John Krasinski. A family is forced to live in silence while hiding from creatures on the hunt that hunt by sound. So, Aaron, most of this movie builds attention with silence. What would you say as a theater goer would be the appropriate snack to eat while watching this?
That's a random question. Not popcorn. Not popcorn. I found that out the hard way. Not popcorn.
Popcorn is tough, and actually my thing of Twizzlers that I normally get, that was tough too. I had to wait until some loud stuff started happening before I could break into my Twizzlers.
Well, that's a really cool thing about this movie is I've seen, I don't know how many horror movies in my lifetime, but I can't remember ever seeing one where I actually would have felt really rude to have made any sound at all. I mean, usually, you know, in a horror film especially, you know, there's scares, there's jumps and everything else, and you have a minute where you can go to your partner and be like, I can't believe that happened, you know, or something like that. Just even a whisper of something. Eat your popcorn, whatever. I didn't want to do any of that because, I mean, there's so much silence. You'd be the asshole in the theater if you do that. And it was actually kind of remarkable. I can't remember ever having an experience quite like that.
No, it was pretty great. And I feel the same way where any sort of noises or anything that we made, I felt bad for it. I really wanted to keep quiet. And I think that's a nice game that the movie plays with us. So Krasinski has about 4 directing credits behind his belt, a few episodes of The Office, a couple of comedies, and family movies. How do you think he did with a horror movie?
Well, first, I don't think it's a horror movie. I know I just called it that myself and everybody else does. I really feel like it's just a thriller. It's very intense. But to me, horror symbolizes something just terrifying. I didn't find it terrifying. I just felt it more unsettling, if that makes sense. But you can call it whatever you want. The direction's very patient is the most important thing I noticed about it, which I really, really respected. Because I'm tired of horror films either take too long to get to what they're trying to get to, or they get there too quickly. And he found a right balance, I felt, of moment and opportunity. So, you know, he elaborates on the story, doesn't give you too much, doesn't give you too little. So you have an idea what's going on. And then you go basically through a horrible night of hell, and everything felt relatively paced and patiently paced. Very effective use of sound or lack thereof. Just the way that he shot it was just very unique, I felt like. And I feel like he's getting a lot of credit for that, and he should, because his acting career, you know, is good, but he's primarily known for The Office. He's not really, you know, a box office star. So this is really his shot to spark with mainstream audiences, and I think it will. It obviously has, so.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing what we saw. And actually, just the reaction the crowd was getting the entire time was a lot of fun to pay attention to. This is one of those times where I really enjoy being in the theater because, especially in a movie this quiet, because you can hear the tension build in everyone. You can hear everyone's breathing. You can hear everyone, like, the pace of the movie affecting who they are and or how they are during it. And it's just, it's really interesting to see. And I thought it was pretty great to see that.
Oh, I did want to point out, he did one thing I thought was really, really interesting for a horror director. There are several moments that, you know, people always watch horror movies and like, ah, that was predictable. We saw it coming. He really shows you, hey, you already know these moments are going to happen. He actually shows you ahead of time or telegraphs ahead of time a particular couple of several particular moments are going to happen. Mm-hmm. And there's more anticipation and more intensity because you know that's going to happen. As opposed to like a shock value where you didn't know that something was there. You didn't know something was going to, you know, attack in that way. And I really love that choice because so it tells the audience everything they need to know. And it's more intense for us because we're just waiting for what does that mean? I mean, we know this thing is there, weapon or whatever it is. What does that mean when they get there? What's it going to happen? You know, and it's just a really cool way to do it.
Mm-hmm. So do you think that this movie is going to be rewatchable by any means?
Yes, I think the theater experience is really remarkably more than the home theater experience will be, though.
Okay. So in my looking around, a lot of the dissenting criticism about this movie is that they gave no backstory. Do you feel that's true?
No, I loved it. Loved it.
Yeah.
I don't need everything explained to me. So that to me is the best way to see it. Go in, don't read a bunch of reviews. I mean, you can listen to this one because obviously, you know, it's Hollywood Outsider. But as far as like reading a bunch of them, no, skip that. Just go see it, enjoy it, take it in. I think it's you find out exactly enough throughout the movie to kind of lead you on.
And I feel like what they did a lot of in this story versus what you get in a lot of movies is that they did a lot of visual storytelling. They mm-hmm. they use the medium that they're working in versus giving you an explanation up front, having someone tell you everything it is, because it you have the beauty of visual cues to work with here and visual storytelling to play with. So I think they use that very well. And and that's one of the reasons why when I saw that as being one of the criticisms, I was kind of like, did you guys not see the movie I saw? So, Aaron, $10 full price of admission. What would you give this?
$8.50 for the theater experience. I think if you watch it at home, probably about $7.50. Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I would give it $8 myself.
All right. Woohoo! Casey, are you still there? Or did you run away?
No, I'm okay. Listening quietly.
Well, I see what you're there.
I'm very excited. I can't wait to see it. Now I want to looking up times to go see it tonight.
you should, because somebody's going to ruin it at some point. You know, right. They will. How do you like your horror movies? Do you like subtle, contemplative, or do you like loud and bloody?
No, I actually have an aversion to blood. So like I can't even really watch medical shows. But I like them to be more thrilly, like, Get Out. I loved Get Out, but like, when I watched it, I had like a migraine for like 3 days. 'Cause I was so like tense and my head was just like down and my neck was all cramped. 'Cause I was just so like tense the whole time. So I'm definitely more of a thriller type person, but I don't think I'll be seeing it alone for sure. I need someone to squeeze, I think.
There you go. That's a great date incentive.
Yeah, exactly.
John, what about you? What do you prefer? Do you have a preference when it comes to horror?
No, just tell me a good horror story. Make me have some sort of feeling that my life's in danger. I'll take it. You know, make me feel alive. Go ahead, I dare you.
That's great.
Wow. I got to be honest. I mean, if you're trying to scare me, I think subtle's the way to go. But if for rewatchability, I think blood's probably the key for me. Yeah. Because subtle works the first time. And then you watch it again and you know where all the cues and the moments are. It's generally not going to work as effectively.
That's true.
I find, like, especially with this movie, the rewatchability will come from all the different visual cues, because there's a lot there and mm-hmm. you can't, there's no way to see it all the first time.
Well, you definitely can't hear any of it. Know what I'm saying?
Do you think, I mean, does it sound good enough that it would be nominated for any kind of award, like Ooh. For sound mixing?
I could, you know what? I could never understand the difference between sound mixing and editing. I know it's very, there's a definite difference, but editing and mixing are both stellar, I think, here. Yes, I could see that.
It's like a character in itself.
It's the whole movie. I mean, it really is the whole movie.
It really is.
I hope they get something, at least a nice fruit basket.
A nice thanks for playing, but fruit basket.
Yeah. Good job, guys.
The other thing we saw, we'll talk about probably a little briefer, but Blockers. Three teenage girls make a sex pact to lose their virginity on prom night. Their two dads and one mom find out about it and set out to stop them from making life-changing decisions. This R-rated comedy stars Leslie Mann, Ike Barinholtz, and John Cena. John, comedies are pretty easy to review. So the story and the comedy are all that really matter. Does the story work for you at all?
The story did work for me. I thought it was cute. I thought it was funny. And the characters we spent all our time with, which were Leslie Mann, John Cena, and Ike Barinholtz, I mean, they were charming and they were fun. They were great. And they made me laugh. I think this movie kind of puts me in a weird spot, because like there's two movies back to back this weekend where I've said that I'm about to say something else about the people that I went to the movie with, or I was in the theater with, which was they actually improved upon the experience. because it was the listening to the crowd laugh at what was going on made me laugh even harder. And there was somebody there who, when it comes, like, I'm pretty famous on the show for my laugh. People have commented on it. And when I start laughing, everybody starts breaking, and it happens like a real laugh, not my evil cartoon character laugh, but my real laugh. There was somebody there that puts my laugh to shame. And every time they would crack up, I would just start losing it because it was just so infectious and the moments called for it. And it was a lot of fun.
Did you know that there are people like that get paid to laugh on, like they're professional laughers, and like shows, TV shows, like especially live shows will pay like three or four of them to be like planted in the audience and laugh.
What?
No, tell me more.
Yeah. So I think you should look it up. I have never looked this up, so I don't know where you would go to, like, I don't know if you need an agent, a laughing agent. I don't know, but it's a thing.
I'm going to have to now because
what a great gig. Isn't that great? Fun. What do you do for a living? I laugh. What if it's not funny? I still laugh. I get paid to laugh.
I have to laugh. It's like they're actually, you know how like eventually you, like, there's always issues with your job. Like no job is perfect. And they're just like, yeah, you know, just like laughing. I don't always want to, but, you know, you gotta pay the bills.
Sometimes I just bring it.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not really feeling like laughing today, but I guess I'll go to work anyways.
I gotta eat. I need milk.
I can just see it next week. All right, here's my 2 weeks' notice. What are you gonna do now? I'm gonna go laugh for a living.
Right, exactly.
What a great job. That'd be a great job. You could do anything in Hollywood. I swear to God, they have a job for just about anything you can think of.
Yes, agreed. That there are some really weird niche things that people fall into.
You're not there yet, are you?
I mean, we're getting there. Might as well. I have a friend who's the stand-in for Taylor Swift. So she just goes around, and like, I have a couple of friends who are just stand-ins, and they just, one of my friend is as a child stand-in. She's so little, she's teeny tiny, very short. Mm-hmm. And so they pay her to stand in while they do the lighting before they bring the actual kids on to like do the scenes.
The stand-ins always crack me up because the way I look at it as a, I guess a fan is you're so big as a talent, you can't stand in a spot for 5 minutes so they can line everything up. It's just that. To me, it's just one of those things where if it was me, I can't fathom me letting someone else do my standing for me. I mean, I just can't.
Well, what's funny is that like until you're there, like sit there for 3 hours while they figure out how to get the lighting just right, like each department takes so freaking long, like so long, because each thing is a craft in itself. So like the lighting, it takes a million years to light the skin properly and to get what the director wants and to like get it all perfect. That, you know, actor types, that it's just like you're ready to do your scene, or you're nervous, or you're trying to remember your lines, or you're like, or you get on there and the actor's just like talking and talking and talking and trying to make everyone laugh, and it's just distracting, you know? So it's like, just leave them in their room while we figure out the lighting. They can work on their lines, or they can be getting makeup put on. Cause makeup also takes 8 million years. It's like, it actually is an effective system. But it is hilarious that is like somebody's entire job. I had a stand in one time.
Did you?
Actually, I did. And I only had 3 lines.
Did you feel like you made it?
Yeah, I felt like I made it. Cause I was like, oh my God, I have a stand in and a trailer. What is this? And I did the scene, and they were like, okay, you can go. I was like, but like, can I hang out? Like,
this trailer is nicer than my apartment.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, can I just stay just like for a couple more hours? They're like, get out of here, please. You're embarrassing yourself.
I got to be honest. I'm probably too mean. I would just come up and start walking around in a rocking around them in circles, just trying to make them as uncomfortable as possible. Like, thanks for doing this for me. Really appreciate it. Why are you walking around? Just checking you out. That's all. No problem. Thanks for everything you do.
Hey, this person doesn't even look like me.
Exactly.
And Casey, I want to thank you for making me feel bad for saying that that's a silly thing, because now I get it. I get it.
No.
You should feel bad.
No, I think you're right. It's ridiculous. stuff that Hollywood has to do is ridiculous, but it's like, if you don't do it, you're there. I mean, there's a reason for the madness. What's the phrase? There's a method to the madness.
Yeah.
But it's dumb.
it definitely, I want that job though. Standing. Put it on your resume. I stand. What did you do? I stood. Oh. Oh.
You know, if you're like in the union for being an extra, you can make like $200 or $300 a day for being a union extra.
All right. So let me see. I gotta go get a new job for laughing.
And standing.
Yeah. I mean, it's actually a difficult process. You have to clock a certain amount of hours and you have to pay to get in the union. But like, yeah. People make a living off of it.
I've heard that the zombies in Walking Dead actually make a solid living doing that.
Yeah, I believe it. Mm-hmm. Well, if you think about it, it's kind of difficult. It's hard. Everybody who's on set, it's like, it's hard. And it's like, it's a whole thing. 12-hour, 14-hour days.
Yeah, that you're going to have to pay me to be in that makeup.
Can you imagine, though, like, you guys take a break and you're, like, getting coffee and you're just, like, in full zombie gear? Like, like, hey, did you see the latest Jimmy Kimmel? Yeah, that was pretty funny. And you're, like, full zombie.
I would go to Walmart. That's what I'd do. Yeah. See if they even pay attention to me. You're just like, ah, tank. What? This is normal to you.
No one's going to notice it because it's people. You got to go to people Walmart website and just you'll be like, oh, they can show up wearing whatever they want. They're not going to notice somebody in a zombie outfit.
That's my point. Really won't. Yeah, that's my point. I totally forgot about blockers, John. No, that was a great.
Oh, right. We were doing something.
I forgot about that. Just if $10 is the full price of admission, what do you give blockers? Did you enjoy it enough
Blockers get $6 for me. I had a really good time with it.
Huh. I had a much better time. I had like seven. I had really, it was fun. I mean, he takes beer up his bum. How is that a bad thing?
And then it gets like, you know, we're not going to go into scenes.
Yeah, but don't go into that. Yeah.
There's a lot Things of happen. Like, I liked how John Cena was put in all these awesome positions where it's, and he's so game for it. Like, I can't wait to see him do more things in acting because he always seems to be more game for whatever it is they're asking him of. And he does it so well.
Yeah. I like John Cena. Seems like a nice guy.
John Cena. Wow. Hey, he and The Rock should work together.
I would watch the hell out of a movie with both of them.
Me too.
Yeah, but they would have to play against type, both of them.
Twins.
They're like nannies.
Twins. They're going to do a remake of Twins.
Yeah.
Oh shit. That's sold right there. Yeah, I would totally watch that.
All right. Now we go to what's coming up. John, what movies are coming out?
All right, so coming up on 4/13, directed by Brad Peyton, we have Rampage. A primatologist, Davis Okoye, shares an unshakable bond with George, the extraordinarily intelligent gorilla who has been in his care since birth. But a rogue genetic experiment gone awry transforms a gentle ape into a raging monster. This stars Dwayne Johnson, Jeffrey Dean Morgan, Malin Ackerman, and Joe Manganiello.
Manganiello.
Right? Yep.
Isn't he from, Oh, he was great in that stripper movie with Channing Tatum.
Yes.
Magic Mike 22.
I've heard very much, and I've seen this. I've been forced to see the scene too many times. My wife wants me to put the costume on. It's just not going to happen.
Hey, let me tell you, I've actually enjoyed watching that movie, and I think his dancing is quite sexy, and I'm a straight man, so.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good costume. Nobody's going to judge.
No, not at all.
I'll judge.
All right.
Yeah.
Coming up next, we have Borg and McEnroe. It's a limited release and also on VOD, directed by Janice Metz. The story of the 1980s rivalry between Placid Bjorn Borg and volatile John McEnroe, or Johnny Mac, as some people like to call him. I can't even pronounce this kid's name. Sverrir Gundason is going to be Bjorn Borg. Whatever. And then the Boof, Shia LaBeouf, is going to be John McEnroe. What about that for casting?
Shia. What's up, Shia? Where you been, bruh?
He's wandering around making movies randomly.
This is terrible to say, and I hate being this person, but legitimately, I see him around Studio City all the time. Like, everyone has a Shia LaBeouf spotting. They're like, oh, yeah, I just saw, like, Shia LaBeouf at this cafe. We're like, oh, no way. I just saw him at this place. He just like wanders.
is he the Studio City Maury Povich?
I think so. I think yeah. so. Everyone's got a story. He's taller than you would think.
Really?
Yeah. I was like, oh, great. You're taller and thinner than I thought you would be. And then he got a sandwich and left.
He actually seems like he'd be a nice guy to have a beer with. So
yeah, right.
Maybe not six, because by then you're getting arrested. But the first one, I think, would be fun.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, that's being followed up by Truth or Dare on 4/13 as well, directed by Jeff Wadlow, who's brought us things like Kick-Ass 2, Never Back Down, and Cry Wolf, just to give you an idea of what Jeff has done. A harmless game of Truth or Dare among friends turns deadly when somebody or something begins to punish those who tell a lie or refuse a dare, starring Lucy Hale and Tyler Posey.
Ooh.
Mm. Ooh.
Riveting.
Yeah. This is my dramatic pass.
Then we have 10 by 10. It's a VOD release directed by Susie Ewing, and it's Lewis is an outwardly ordinary guy, but in reality, he is hiding an obsession, revenge, against Kathy. Lewis kidnaps Kathy in broad daylight, takes her to his home, and where he locks her up in a soundproof cell and attempts to extract dark secrets from her past. Surprisingly enough, this one stars Luke Evans and Kelly Riley. I got those two mixed up and made one name.
I thought you were going to say Kylie Minogue, and I thought this sounded fascinating. And then you lost me.
Kylie Jenner, and I was like, whoa.
Whoa.
Return.
No, just leave her. Walk away. Just lock her up and leave. Just
seal the cell, never come back.
Yep.
And then finally on VOD, we have 20 Weeks, directed by Liana Penicar. A couple must decide how to move forward when their baby is diagnosed with a serious health condition at the 20-week mark scan. Starring Anna Margaret Holliman and Aaron knows this gentleman very well. Amir Arison.
Arison.
Yeah. Arison. Mm-hmm. I was close. I've heard it both ways.
He hasn't.
So we have 1, 2, 3, 4. I don't know. We have a few movies coming out this weekend, and I already know what my answer is. Aaron, what are you going to go see this weekend?
I'll be honest. Well, this is kind of biased. I'm going to drop a Casey. Yeah, I know Amir, so I'm probably going to go to his movie. So I'm going to name drop. But I definitely want to see his movie. 20 Weeks looks really good. And I find him, even outside of The Blacklist and the other stuff that he's done, I find him a very charismatic actor. So I want to see what he's done. I've heard great things about the movie. I'm definitely going to see Rampage, though. But I will watch 20 Weeks first, believe it or not.
Hmm. All right, Casey, what do you think you're going to see this weekend?
I'm definitely, obviously, going to go see The Quiet Place. I have seen – there are some really good movies out right now. I just saw Isle of Dogs and Death of Stalin. But there's also Thoroughbreds is out, and I heard that's really good too. Mm-hmm. Have you guys heard about that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. Maybe you guys have already talked about it, but yeah, I'm probably between definitely A Quiet Place, but that might be tonight. And then I'm probably going to try to see Thoroughbreds. And I'm trying to get MoviePass soon because I have spent so much money this month seeing movies, and I'm like, okay, I give.
why were you fighting it? Just let it in. Let it happen.
I was worried that it was hurting the theaters. Mm. Oh, if people aren't paying full price for tickets, you know, it's going to destroy our industry as a whole. And so I was really worried about it. But the last time I went to the movie theater, I asked the nice man at the counter if they were losing money because my friend was using MoviePass, and he was like, oh no, they pay us full price. Mm-hmm. We make more money because you now spend money on our concessions, and you're just selling your information to a data company, so mm-hmm. we don't pay at all. And I was like, oh great, okay, what, well, as long as we're gonna still have movie theaters, I'm fine.
I love how he's like, you're basically giving up your privacy, and that's okay with me.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, go buy a popcorn now.
Hey, let me ask, how was Isle of Dogs and Death of Stalin, since you saw both of those?
I liked both of them. I loved Isle of Dogs. It was the theater I was in was packed, but everyone was really into it. It was really cute. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And then Death of Stalin, You have to know that it is a dark comedy going into it. It's supposed to be kind of ridiculous. It's about, you know, there's none of them have Russian accents. They're all British, except for like two American accents. And it's like, it adds to the humor. But if you like dark comedy, I think you'll appreciate it.
I have to check that out.
Yeah, it's good.
Johnny, what was your pick? I don't remember if you said.
I didn't say. I think I'm going to go see Rampage.
Rampage!
Johnny, that movie looks so ridiculous, but in all the right ways.
Well, yeah, but it's a video game movie, and it was one of my favorites as a kid. So, I just want to see some ridiculous large monsters crushing a city. Come on.
I want to see the scene where The Rock says, "That's a big arm, let it happen." That's all I want.
This is the one with the gorilla.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Uh-huh. Okay, got it.
You sound so excited. Uh-huh. Yeah, got it.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. I just like all of The Rock's movies are starting to blur a little bit. But I saw that preview last night before Ready Player One, and I was like, "What is this one? What's this?"
It's true.
Is this the one where he punches the wave, or is this the one where he punches the monkey? Which one is this?
I was like, if you took this dialogue out of the trailer and just put people running in like Speedos over it, it would be the exact same like trailer to like, what was the one? Baywatch. Like,
Baywatch.
His sound bites are like exactly the same in every single trailer.
Yeah.
It's funny.
That's
But hey, true. That's why we love him. It's reliable.
First time I saw the trailer, no lie, I thought it was a Jumanji trailer. I'm like, why are they showing the Jumanji trailer again? The movies are
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, Godzilla. I think they're trying to make the Kong. Kong was recent. Mm-hmm. They're making a shared universe of Kong and all of those monsters. They're making a whole thing out of it. Which is great. Great. More monster movies.
Yeah. Rock can show up in one of those, too. Why not?
Whoa. Whoa.
Maybe he's in a Godzilla suit and he fights Kong.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Okay. I'll love it.
All right. Let's go to our From the Outside In topic this week, first thing I want to ask you guys is a question. How many TV shows, this is off the top of your head, how many TV shows are you behind on right now at this moment? How many would you estimate?
100.
Seriously?
I mean, I'm trying so hard. I got in this vortex of Gilmore Girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
I was like, it came out when I was a kid. I was like, oh, nostalgia. It's taken me about 3 weeks. Each season has like 20 something episodes in it. They're all an hour long. And I'm one season away from finishing. And I'm like, I'm having I have to finish this, but it is exhausting. And so it set me behind like 3 weeks on all my other shows because I'm spending so much time watching Gilmore Girls.
So much Gilmore Girls.
It's too much. It's too much Gilmore Girls. I can only binge one at a time. I can't really hop around.
Johnny, where are you at? How many you got?
Somewhere between all of them and every single one of them.
God. I counted. I have 16 specifically that I have waiting in my, that I know I want to watch or I want to catch up on and I haven't had a chance to.
But wait, how do you know you have 16 is my question.
I counted them up. The ones that I really, really want to catch up on, I counted them up.
Because I tried to do that, but I lost count every single time. There's just too many. There's some that I started, but just I got busy and I didn't get back to. And then there's some that I really want to watch, but I want to make sure I'm in the right frame of mind to get into it. Then there's, you know what? There's these that. And that's really my biggest issue is like, okay, there's this. I really want to watch this, but I got to make sure my head's right for this. So I start slipping into let me watch some mindless comedy just to get me over it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So
I watched, I tried to binge Black Mirror. Black Mirror is a tough one to binge because it's mm-hmm. all like, you're so torn up after every episode. That was a dark weekend. And then, there was one time where I was like, oh, Big Little Lies. Yeah, I'll put that on and try to fall asleep to it. 12 hours later, I finished the series. Like, I just like stayed up all night and into the day, just binged Big Little Lies. And that one was tough too, because that was really unsettling.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. it'll ruin your time. I mean, I've like paused to check in on like comedians in cars getting coffee and the hilarity for charity stand up stuff. But I binged Queer Eye recently. That was great. Those are feel good ones.
Aww.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The world needs them.
I used to love watching the original Queer Eye, and I started watching this Queer Eye, but then I realized that I wasn't in the right headspace for it.
What headspace do you need to be in to watch Queer Eye?
Great question.
Well, I need to be in a place where I'm accepting of good, happy vibes. And sometimes I'm just not. Sometimes I'm just like, you know what? Screw this. I'm not in the mood for your happy people running around doing cool things. I just want to be in a bad mood. And it happens.
What a weird ass place to be. You're so weird. Why?
You're weird.
You know, usually when people are in a bad mood, they're like, you know what? I'm going to put on something that gives me happy vibes. Not John. He's like, you know what? I want to feel darker. I want to DC my life. That's what I want to do. I want to darken this shit up.
I like to dig in deeper. When I'm in a bad mood, I don't like to like come out of it. I like to go out the other side.
Just sit in it. That's when I put on a good like documentary series. Gary Shandling. Have you watched that on HBO? The Gary Shandling 2-part documentary?
No.
Do tell.
It's like 2 hours each part, so it's a 4-hour thing. But Judd Apatow produced it recently, and his mentor was Gary Shandling, and it like goes through his diaries and like all this stuff, and it like it's not feel good really. It's really like kind of heartbreaking. So that's a good one to get into.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, well, when you had at first when you said documentaries, I'm thinking like The Staircase.
All right, I'm steering you guys back. Let's get back on topic. 55% of listeners said 5 to 10 shows they're behind on, and 28% said they were 20 plus shows over. Holy cow, that's a lot. So I guess almost a third are kind of with you guys. Do you guys have another list of shows that friends have recommended that you just don't have time for?
Well, I think I've said this before, but I'm actually swearing off most of my friends' recommendations because it has to be some pretty glowing responses from more than just one friend to be able to make it on the list at this point. Cause I don't have time for anything that anybody else likes. I don't have time to sit there and watch something that I'm going to, you know, they want to have a conversation with me about. I got too much. I really got too much.
Casey, what about you? Is that on top of your 100 or is that included in your original 100?
That's on top of my 100.
No, Casey, you're not Casey.
Oh, right. Sorry, I forget who I am sometimes.
I know, obviously.
You mean like things that people have recommended to me that are outstanding?
Yeah, like you've got your 100 and then all the other ones. Hey, you got to see this. You'll love it. This will be the best show ever. You'll love it.
You know, I think I'm usually the one, obviously, per our previous conversation, I'm the one that's pushing shows on other people. Like, I'm the pusher. So, like, I find these things because I'm just like always obsessed and I'm always watching something. And I don't think that my friends have the same taste that I do. So they're like, oh, like you should watch this show. And I'm like, no, what are you talking about? Why would I ever watch that show? Like I'm a snob, I think. And I'm like, you should watch this one instead.
Watch my show instead.
Yeah, exactly. All of them are usually stuff that I'm like searching through on my own and going, oh yeah, this alien documentary, 100%. That's going on my list.
You like conspiracy stuff? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I got into like a conspiracy wormhole at one point and it was intense and it was good.
Well, I've got way too many to count, especially from doing this show. Everybody sends me a message every time they find a new show, which is great. I found a lot of gems that way. They'll send me an email or they'll ping me on Twitter or whatever and be like, hey, did you check this out? Da, da, da. That's great. It's just, you know, when you hit about 10,000 of them, you start running out of things that you can watch anymore. So
right.
I kind of broke this down a little bit. Over 30 or 40 years ago, we had 3 or 4 channels and then we had cable. And then we had the real cable. Remember, there was originally just the little cable, which was like 13 or 14 channels. Then we got into real cable where you had ESPN and other stuff. Then we had pay TV or premium TV. And then once Netflix introduced streaming as a legitimate option, our choices just exploded. So as of now, there are around 500 scripted shows on television, which brings us... Yeah, right? It's stupid. Which brings us to our topic. Do you think we have too much TV? Casey, do you think we have too much?
This is a difficult argument because, you know, like watching the Gary Shandling documentary the other day, like his whole goal was to be on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. And he remembers that, like, you know, the day after he was on Johnny Carson, like he got a TV deal and like everyone in the entire world knew who he was. And it's like, you don't really have that kind of outlet anymore. Same with like Friends or Seinfeld, where like everyone watched everything together. So everyone was talking about the same stuff and you were all on the same page. And, you know, I think it's kind of like we've lost that sense of community in what we watch. But now like things can be so, we can watch so much more of the stuff that we like. Like we're not forced to watch the same thing, you know, over and over again. So we can like go into really specific niches. I don't know what's better for the industry either. I don't know if it's better to have more people working at lower rates or a handful of people working and making a ton of money.
Well, it's got to be better for you as an actor because there's more opportunities.
I mean, but like, you know, you could book a role on Orange is the New Black and make $300 a day versus, you know, if you booked a part on Seinfeld, you're getting $5,000 for the day or whatever, you know, it's like very different,
good point.
At the same time, more opportunity, I guess.
No, that's a good point. That's a really good point. John, do you think we have too much?
A second ago, I would have said that, no, we don't, but it's possible that as an industry, no, you know what? I'm going to go back and say, yeah, no, we don't have too much television. We now have a system that is designed for people to get what they want as opposed to being force-fed things and trying to find ways to be happy with that. And as an industry, entertainment is now opening up. Sure, the money isn't as good as it used to be for people who are actually participating in that industry. However, there's more opportunity to, in my mind, there's more opportunity for more people to be involved and to become a star or somebody of notoriety within their own niche. So I think that's actually better now because as far as creative outlets are concerned, that just means we have more to play with, I think.
Are there even real stars anymore? I mean, everybody is a celebrity, it feels like. I mean, everybody is a celebrity. So I don't know if there are really any stars. I mean, The Rock is, obviously we mentioned him a couple of times. He stands out because he's huge. But I don't know if anybody else really is seen as a star anymore. So,
yeah, I mean, you have to like, I mean, this is terrible, but you turn to YouTube and that is actually, fortunately and unfortunately, the next TV. And, you know, we laugh at these like YouTube celebrities and YouTube stars, but that's kind of where it's at. Like they're the ones who really are influential and have the same kind of power that old stars used to have.
Yeah. Well, they have the voice of the younger generation for sure. They that's who's watching most of what they're doing. So yeah, YouTube and Instagram and all these other outlets with social media where people are flocking to these stars for whatever reason. I've looked into some of this stuff. I don't get why people follow half these kids there, but hey, good for them, I guess.
Right. I think it's harder on the creators because where you used to have a system of, I mean, there's a reason that there's 8 million departments like we talked about earlier. It's hard. It's a difficult job and it's hard to also like manage yourself and to know all the right things to say or do. You know, you see all these YouTubers getting in trouble for controversial stuff where they're all by themselves. They don't know. They're in their room. Nobody's telling. No, there's no producer saying, no, don't do that. You know? So there's just a lot of stuff that they now have to do on their own and running these industries by themselves that it's like, you know, it's a new type of talent and a new type of ask from people who are famous now.
Man, the world has changed. I remember when I was a kid back in the day when I walked uphill, you know, in the snow, it was, there was like 20 celebrities and you could, you know who they were and they kind of ran the entertainment world. And now it's not so much anymore. I mean, the word star is tossed around so loosely anymore that you've got the established, the longtime Meryl Streep, Robert De Niro, those kind of people, but there's just not many stars left anymore. It's just not a thing.
No, we talked about this before when we talked about the Oscars, but we're almost to a point where if someone said, what would you rather have, get yourself an Oscar or be in a Marvel movie? There's a lot of people who would say, I want to be in a Marvel movie.
Yeah. The money or for the influence?
Both. Did you see Zoe Saldana just recently said that there are a lot of actors that still look down on actors that are in Marvel movies? Where she'll go. Yep. And yeah, she recently gave an interview and she said that there are elitist actors that will look down on her and their other compatriots who are doing Marvel movies and, you know, basically looking down on them for doing the Marvel film. And she went on to say that, you know, hey, we bring a lot of light to children and the world at large. And why is that a problem for anyone? That's a great thing. And she's not wrong.
Jealousy. I mean, that's probably because they can make so much more money doing, you know, not as artistically innovative stuff.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, one more back to TV. I'm sorry. I got us off on a tangent at that time. The one thing I kept thinking about when I was thinking about this topic is I want more bad TV shows.
Why?
Because I feel like my problem is I have too much good TV. I don't have people telling me, you know, this show sucks, that show sucks. I can't remember the last time I heard somebody say a show was really, really bad. Everybody's always telling me how great everything is, which means I want to see everything, but I also want to go outside and I want to see Friends. I feel like there's too many. I want to watch old shows. I mean, I know, you know, that's not hip anymore, but there are some stuff I want to go back and just kind of check out again. I haven't seen in a while or something. And if the more bad shows I have, the more I can take those opportunities, I guess. So it feels weird, but I think that probably answers my question. That probably means that there's way too much TV for me.
It'll even out soon. I mean, whatever's best for the consumer is what's going to end up reigning. So like all these different platforms where you have to subscribe to and all these like all these shows and stuff, like it'll, I think, eventually even out to where whatever's easiest for us and what's more palatable to us is going to find its way.
With you being in LA, do you get a sense or is there a finger on the pulse for where it's going next? I mean, you talked about YouTube, but
I think that Disney's about to come out with something insane. Like if you watch what they've been doing over the past couple of years, they've bought up a ton of properties. They started pulling their content from stuff like Netflix and you know, the smaller entities and stuff. And they've announced that they're going to do their own streaming service. I think it's going to be a streaming service and more. And I think it probably will shake things up.
That would be insane. And you know, it's going to happen because they own everything else. Why not?
Right. Exactly. And I think that's why they've started owning everything. And it's because I think they're about to do something that's going to shift stuff dramatically.
They're just going to bitch slap Netflix.
I think so, honestly, unfortunately, but it's Disney.
That's true. I mean, you can't really argue with the mouse. So what has changed for you the most with your particular viewing habits, like watching TV shows now versus 10 years ago or however long ago?
For me, the biggest change has been that now I watch TV on my terms. I don't let the TV DVR tell me when I need to watch something. I'm never running out of room because I don't have cable. So I watch things when I want to watch it, when I'm ready to watch it. And honestly, at this point, I'm reaching a point where come Saturday and Sunday, I unplug almost entirely from the idea of watching TV or watching any other thing possible because, I want to start going out and living life. You know, these shows are great and they're bringing so much joy, but there's so much TV going on or so much TV that has to be watched that I'm kind of rebelling against it in a weird way.
Maybe it's because you're watching such negative, dark shit. Maybe you should watch some happier stuff and you'd feel better about it.
I almost said Dr. Horribles, but what is it? Lemony Snicket's a series of unfortunate events. Does that count? That's a weird one.
I don't know. I don't watch it.
You should. You should. It's fun. It's cute. It's adorable.
Add it to your list.
Casey, what about you? What's changed for you in terms of your viewing habits? Have you done much changing?
I mean, I think I've always defaulted to always watching TV and always watching movies. As opposed to like, but that's because I'm like obsessed with this art form. But now I can watch whenever I want versus like having to wait until the next week or whatever to watch it. And I won't have a basketball game during the show and I won't have to like catch it on repeat or whatever. Like it's, I guess it's more enabling to my addiction.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's necessarily a good thing, but I fully enjoy it and appreciate it.
Yeah, same. Yeah. I'm like, TV is a pusher and I'm like, hit me.
Yeah, exactly.
But the one thing that bothers me the most about what now versus, you know, a decade ago, I don't have appointment TV anymore.
Right.
That drives me crazy. I really miss having like water cooler television. You know, after show airs, most people I know haven't watched it. With the exception of maybe Game of Thrones. I mean, Game of Thrones is still there. That's one of the rare exceptions. But
I was about to say, yeah, Game of Thrones is that. Yeah.
And I think Westworld probably will be as well. People just.
Yeah, Westworld and like if there's football games, there's athletic things.
Sportball. There's sportball.
Sportball. The Super Bowl stuff.
It's a huge change for me. I mean, I really miss talking with friends about major plot points. And the next day, you know, we would actually, even if you were online a lot, you know, you could go to message boards and people were constantly talking about what happened that night. Well, now you don't have that because everybody's watching everything the second it comes on because there's so much binge watching. You know, you watch 10 episodes. So when you ask somebody, hey, what'd you think of that show? They know how the whole series ended, where you're still on episode two. I really miss that. I really feel like we have this, and I blame Netflix. So if you're listening to Netflix, I blame you. They created this culture that kind of loathes any kind of delay, I mean, we're so spoiled right now. We want the entire series right now, always right now. And I think that bums me out a little bit.
I kind of think that over time though, that habit is going to lessen and lessen because I mean, there are times where I just can't sit down and watch the entire season of Stranger Things. I couldn't sit down and watch the entire season of this most recent season of I'm about to call it Dr. Horrible again, but it's not that.
Lemony Snickets. There you go.
Thank you for reminding me of the thing you didn't watch and I did watch. So that's, I think I'm fading now. But anyhow, I didn't have time to sit down and watch the entire thing in one swoop like I did the first time. I had stuff to do. I had a puppy to take care of. I had a wife to keep happy. I had drones to go fly. I had a job I had to go to, and I needed to get sleep. Sleep is important. So I think it changed for me, and I have to assume that there's at least a portion of the population which will start changing as well, as far as like they will not feel that need to watch everything all at once.
I wonder if there'll ever be like an app that'll turn your Netflix off or like log you out and not let you back in from the hours of like midnight to 6 a.m. or something like that, so you'll sleep.
It's called the power button. All we got to do is turn your phone off.
That's true.
Yeah. It's hard to do. And honestly, I mean, I get it. It's like crack. If you finish an episode, everything's a cliffhanger. Everything's serialized. So you get to the end of it. You know, you can watch the next episode. So why wouldn't you? Who needs sleep or food? And I think we get addicted. I don't see a change in though, John. I think you're nuts. I can't imagine. We're getting more and more demanding of everything right now. I don't see that changing. I mean, you even see networks are starting to look at different ways of doing television. CBS, you know, they have Star Trek Discovery and they have their own little web, you know, what do they call it?
Web series, webisodes.
Well, no, it's a series, but I mean, you know, they have their own channel, their own basically streaming service.
Oh, okay.
Subscription service. And I can see networks going more to that because everybody wants their stuff right frickin' now. They don't want to wait week to week to week as much anymore. And I see that getting stronger, not less.
So you're saying I'm the weird one?
Yes.
Yes.
Oh. Well, that's new.
You see something in the human population I don't think Casey and I are seeing.
We have less faith in humanity.
Exactly. And ourselves, because I totally am probably going to keep binging myself. So,
yeah.
All right. So it's a great problem to have at times, but do you ever find it stressful, Casey?
I mean, yeah. I also like trying to catch up on old movies that I never saw or watched, or, you know, it's just like, I feel like I, no matter how much I watch, you know, like I just watched V for Vendetta for the first time. And like, you know, I'm trying to catch up so that I can talk about classic stuff, but then there's new stuff that's coming out and I have to keep up with that. And, you know, it's just like, it's a lot to try to even just like keep in the conversation, especially with film people.
That's a great point about classics. I don't, yeah. It's so hard to get somebody to watch a movie that's not, or show or anything that's not new anymore because there's so much.
Right, exactly. Like you don't go back and go on a Friday night, oh, what should we watch? Oh, let's pull out this classic. It's like, let's try to get through three episodes of this show.
Yeah, I've actually been, I was this past weekend, there was actually a moment where, hey, do you want to watch The Last Jedi? Oh, man, I mean, it's kind of been out for a couple weeks. It's been on Blu-ray for like 2 weeks or something, and it's already too old to watch now.
Wow, that's insane.
I got to enjoy a fun conversation. Where I live, we have a film school, and actually it's my alma mater because before it was a film school, it's just a straight-up art school as well. But where I work, we had a couple of the students show up and they want to use one of our spaces to film a movie in. And yeah. As I'm doing something for them, I'm listening to one kid look over to the other kid. Hey man, I saw this other movie last night. It's kind of old, but it was really cool. It's really old though. You should watch it. And the guy goes, yeah, what movie was it? Well, it's got the guy from that played Star-Lord's dad in it. And, it's called Big Trouble in Little China. You should really check it out.
That's not old.
And I was listening to that and I started shaking my head and laughing. And I go, you guys check out They Live. Oh my God, that's so old, but so good too.
Oh my God.
Oh, man.
That's so funny.
That is funny. And his name is Kurt Russell and they should freaking know it. All right. He's a god amongst men.
What film school is this?
Right? Amateurs. They don't deserve their degree. They don't deserve it. I got two things about all of this stress me out. I can never keep up with what I want to watch. Number one, obviously, I think we already talked about that. And then the people that keep hounding you to watch something that watch some show that they like, which is fine, but they typically throw that, why haven't you finished it yet, of whatever show that you are watching, or they get mad at you because you haven't watched their show yet. Like, who has time to watch everything everyone recommends? Who? No one.
No one.
Right.
It happens to me all the time. And I have friends who know what I do for this show every week. And they're like, well, did you have time to watch this? No, man. I got things I got to watch for the show.
I actually wish they would stop coming out with new movies every week and Netflix stop dropping 8 shows a week and just give me a chance to breathe. Just take a month off so I can catch up. That would be great.
Did anyone finish watching Altered Carbon?
I started it and I... Mm-hmm. It didn't catch me.
Okay. So it didn't catch you, Aaron.
I never started it because I didn't have 10 hours to kill.
Yeah. I started it and then I watched the first episode twice and I enjoyed it thoroughly both times. I still haven't gone back to it.
Oh, interesting.
So much. Casey, what's your rule? Like when you do watch a show, how many episodes do you give it these days? One, two, three, four, one. What?
This isn't really a reflection on, what I think should be put in place in any way, shape, or form. I am an impatient person by nature. Mm-hmm. If I am not hooked in the first 20 minutes, I'm out.
Ooh, she's tougher than I am.
Damn. Damn.
It's bad. It's bad.
I respect that. You just throw a gauntlet down. Like, you got 20 minutes to get this, and then I'm out.
Well, because I've watched so much by now that I'm like, okay, I see what the tone is, and I see where this is going, and I get the vibe, and I can pick up on the writing, and I'm like, okay, I can't do this, or like, all right, I'm really into this.
So my general rule that I've given out for people is that it's 3 episodes. You have 3 episodes to catch my attention. If you don't have me after 3 episodes, you're not going to have me at all.
Yeah, That's a good, that is something I support. It's not something I follow, but I would recommend that.
You don't even get through one. What are you talking about? Like the main character hasn't even showed up in Casey's show. And she's like, well, this isn't going to work out for them.
Yeah.
Well, we always post the topic in the Facebook group, and overwhelmingly, you all agreed we have too much television, though nobody was really complaining about it. But since many of the comments were similar in nature, we decided to pick out, we picked out four that highlighted specific things. John, why don't you start us off?
Wayne Edwards, he says, no, and yes. Between Netflix and Amazon, Hulu, original content, and a couple of shows that are good on HBO and Showtime, it's exhausting. But it's good exhausting. Like, so much great TV out there. TV is definitely intruding on my movie time, which I agree wholeheartedly. It's like, how am I supposed to sit down and watch a movie when there's so much good TV, too?
I'll be honest. It doesn't intrude on my movie time at all. It really doesn't. Because I will always watch movies over TV. I don't know why. It's just my thing. I would rather go to a theater than sit at home and watch something. Mm-hmm.
With my two experiences in the theater this last weekend, I would probably agree with you. I mean, I had two solid, great experiences. I didn't have like Florida issues happening in my theater this time.
Florida issues.
It's like shootings. Some alligator showing up. Candygram. That didn't happen.
Drew Ross, it blows my mind how much TV content we have nowadays. It's tough finding the time to watch shows with a full-time job and family. Yeah, and that's why you get divorced and live single, Drew. I'm just letting you know. All right. Great time to be a TV fan. We have a lot of watchworthy shows out there, and that is not a bad thing. If only we had the time to soak it all in. And also, I just want to add, I hope my wife's not listening to this episode, because I'm probably going to get in a lot of trouble for that. That's David.
Somebody's going to be in trouble.
Good point. Good point, Drew.
It is a good point. Well, my wife's like the biggest pusher of shows sometimes. There are shows that I'm trying not to watch. Like what happened with Goldbergs? She started watching Goldbergs, and she got like a few episodes into the first season, and she's like, you need to sit down and watch this. You need to sit down and watch this. And then after like the 16th time for her first saying, and I finally started watching it, and now I'm trying to finish the whole series out. Mm. It's cute. It's fun. I do like it. It's actually a really great show, and it's got a nice little message. It started losing me a little bit, but then it swings right back, and it's pretty good, but it's a long-running show. All right, so Kyle Nolan says, yes, the amount of TV is overwhelming these days. With Netflix dropping like five entire seasons of new shows each weekend, it's impossible to keep up. And the viewership is so fragmented. There aren't a lot of water cooler shows anymore that anyone's watching, talking, or anything about in the next morning. And yeah, we covered it. But yeah, I mean, it's we're so pushed around. I mean, I have people at work who want to talk to me about what happened on the House Builders show. And I'm not interested in hearing how, like, he's a waiter at Starbucks, and she collects stamps, and they have a $3 million budget. I don't have time for that.
That's a good point. Last comment. Manuel Perez, I do agree that there is, in fact, too much TV, but in a way, I think that's a good thing. Though maybe hard to watch all the good quality shows out there, having so much challenges networks and streaming services to keep creating the next great phenomenon. Shows like Game of Thrones, Stranger Things, This Is Us, Westworld, The Handmaid's Tale. All these shows came to fruition because of the blueprint that came before of how to make good television. But it can be a catch-22, because for every good show, there's a mindless piece of crap that comes out. Great topic that will be talked about for a long time. That's a good point. And there's too much good stuff. We need more bad shows. Lots of bad shows would be great.
Let's break TV. Let's break it now.
What do you think would happen if Stranger Things season 3 comes out and it sucks? Like
I think the internet will burst into flames, honestly.
Oh, that would be awful. Or Game of Thrones, the final season comes out. Oh, Casey, you love Game of Thrones. And then it's just like such a dud. Just how would you feel?
I feel like that happens sometimes, though. You know? Like it's like that happened with House of Cards with me, honestly. I was so disappointed, and I was disappointed in the Newsroom season finale. Mm. I was disappointed with that. I think that happens often, actually.
Please don't happen. Please don't happen. Please, Game of Thrones, stick to landing, please.
Yeah, right. Like,
so if you excited. Do anything, they need to stick to landing. But it does happen. You know, we've talked about it before. We've mentioned how things just go on that one season too far, and yeah. and it just happens. I'm worried to see what happens with a show like if they happen to continue with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. because they're actually writing an ending that could either be the ending of the series or they can continue it moving forward. And that makes me kind of worried about it.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. You and the other 17 people that still watch that show.
Oh, my God.
All right. So now we go.
Look, those 17 people and I are really close, and we talk every Monday at 7 a.m.
I'm sure you do. Your Facebook group is huge, I'm sure. All right. If you go to moving on, closing thoughts. So any recent film or TV recommendations we haven't already talked about? Casey, you're a guest. Is there anything you recently watched you want to recommend to people or that you checked out?
Oh, man, I think I've said my piece. I think there's about 18 recommendations in this entire episode.
Fair enough. Johnny?
I got nothing new this week. I watched a lot of great things that I've already mentioned before. If you get a chance, do go see the movies we talked about. If you haven't seen them already, Quiet Place was awesome. Blockers, which I can't stop calling it the wrong name because of the imagery of it. Mm-hmm. But, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's that's a lot of fun, too.
Two things. First, I rewatched V and V the Final Battle this weekend. So, yeah, I went old school this weekend, like real old school. Those effects were stellar back in the
day. I rewatched it too.
That's great, isn't it?
I just didn't bring it up here because we're going to bring it up later someplace else.
I don't care. That's what I did this weekend. We're doing an episode of Remake This Movie, right? Where we remake a classic show and we kind of make it for modern. What would it look like in a modern?
Oh, fun.
Yeah. And we did that with V, but we only had to watch the first miniseries. And then I ended up watching The Final Battle because I couldn't stop watching it. Like, it was like crack after a while.
Yeah, that's what happened with me before we recorded the show. I had to watch the full series and then V, The Final Battle. And because I had to get to the theme music because I was I felt so that awesome theme music that Final Battle has. It's not in the first miniseries. So I had to get to there. So it stuck in my head for 2 weeks.
So fun. Have you ever seen it, Casey? Have you ever seen the originals?
No, I guess I got to go watch them now.
Man, there's an actor in there. His name's Mark Singer. And he swaggers his ass so hardcore in every scene. I was telling John, he's like Ace Ventura when he flips into a room and he flips out. It's fantastic. I love it.
Great. It's like the Bill Shatner school of acting.
Awesome.
This is getting a little ahead of the curve, but there's going to be an interview on I think it'll release on Monday with Deion Taylor, who directed Traffic, which comes out I think on the 20th. Comes out on the 20th. That's the Paula Patton, Omar Epps movie, and I got to see that. I will talk about more about that next week, but that is a good movie, and it's a really interesting topic and how they play with sex trafficking and make it a thriller. It was kind of intriguing. But the interview is really good, too, so look for that on Monday. There's that. Casey, where can people find you? Where do you...
Where do I live? No.
What's your address?
My social media is at HeyCase, HEY_KACE. I'm on the Twitter. I'm on the Gram. I'm on the Facebook. You can see me on the Screen Rant YouTube channel and the Richest YouTube channel. That's where I live on the internet.
There's an awesome picture of her on the Gram where she's like fighting with somebody. It's great.
Oh yeah. Do you like that one?
Yeah, it was cool.
It was funny. That's for a sketch that I did for, my YouTube page has a bunch of has all the videos I've made for like Screen Rant and the Richest, but also like a bunch of like comedy sketch videos that I've done and all that jazz.
Well, you did Game of Thrones. You're in Game of Thrones, the musical. Is there any other performances you have coming up?
Not officially yet. A couple in the works, but I can't really get into it. But yeah, yes to that answer, but I can't. I don't have names for you yet.
Well, let us know when you have them, and we'll be sure to.
Okay, I will.
You sound excited, so now I'm really, I want to see. All right. If you ever want to comment on the show or you have any feedback you want to send us, you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. You can join our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Remember to grab the Ho and the Go with our Android apps, Spotify, subscribe and review us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Music, or your podcast app of choice. Find John's artwork on Instagram and everywhere else at rjohn.draws and me on my other podcast, Smirk, Remake This Movie Right and The Blacklist Exposed. Thank you guys for joining us.
Thanks for having me again. I have nowhere else to go.
And thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for coming back. Hopefully you'll come back a lot sooner next time. hopefully.
Yeah, we won't have to wait a year.
Yeah, it's been a while. And remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn.
Thank you for asking me again. Thank you.
Oh, thank you for coming. I'm so glad we were able to not mansplain anything to you this time. Wait, hold on. How is a bunch of eyes?
A bunch of Ivy. Eyes is Ivy. Y's are Ivy. See?
I'm still just dumbfounded. First of all, you expect me to understand what text means. That's just...
This is true. You can't read. Yesterday, they did a Reddit Q&A, and they said, hey, you know what? The last season, everybody was asking us about... Everybody was guessing everything. It was ruining the fun for fans. So what we're going to do is... If we get enough upvotes, we'll release a video explaining all the major spoilers for this season so that we can get that out of the way and you could just enjoy the show. And then you guys will be the gatekeepers of that information. So people that want it can have it, and people that don't want it, just please, please secure it for them. And of course, they got plenty of upvotes, so they released a video. And the video says it's 24 minutes long. It's about a minute and a half or 2 minutes, 3 minutes, whatever it is. And it's just...
It's 3 minutes.
Evan Rachel Wood singing Never Gonna Give You Up.
Great.
So all that, we're going to go over it again. But I just want to make sure you knew what we were talking about.
Great.